咱行了，这他们这些不跟对之呗，但他到过南庄啊，进了进过了各镇工，可是全是用了唐南庄，唐南南就唐南南都跟你们都去给送我那些，啊，俺俩做他进修这一年啊，哎，其实。旅行规矩各种管，来来，他们这几个大，过了各种桥管，现在都送下这些下，西部跨了那边个里那样，那呢，趁机都去，他们说，朝什么人在呢？杨国呀，朝什么人个亲？现在呢，西蒙公都主要是的。미기 죽은 게다 지금 못하네 연구하래 근데 인도 지금 소주 공원에 소원지기 어디 이디 패쳐 조심쟁이를 떼네 연구야 조심쟁이지 근데 인도 자네 치면 모두 타봐요 조심쟁이지 다 전에 타봐 타봐가 남러버 타봐 러버는 것이 남아서 러버네 타봐 죽어요 아래
And then the three trainings also are dependent on the other sentient beings. The first of these is so everything good that we experience in the world. Our daily needs and fame and so forth, as well as all the practices of the three trainings which we do, are done in relation to sentient beings. And so these trainings are based on we start with the practice training of morality as the basis for the other two. And so omniscient state of Buddhahood comes through Bodhicitta, which is rooted in compassion, which in turn is based on loving affection. And so, as Shantideva says, we attain Buddhahood in reliance on both animal, both sentient beings and Buddhas. And so, half the course of our omniscient state of Buddhahood comes in reliance on sentient beings. And so, our practices of method and skillful means and wisdom come in reliance on sentient beings or in relation to. So, beginning with the goodness in samsara, the goodnesses in samsara, up to the omniscient state of Buddhahood, all come in relation to sentient beings. And therefore, the first Dalai Lama, having practiced all these paths that he says that we should feel grateful to all sentient beings. And then his disciples like Benjin Yishi Zemo and others, and they said with sadness that now that you, the omniscient one, referring to the first Dalai Lama, is now very old. They said that you, Benjin Ishitsemo, and other disciples have said that you have actually completed your enlightened activity to serve sentient beings, and now you may be focusing on taking rebirth in the Sukhavati land. As Then in reply to Penchen Yishitsemo and other disciples, the first Dalai Lama said that I don't have any intention or wish to be born in Sukhavati land, a pure land, but to be born in places where I can serve sentient beings. So when I read these in the biography of the first Dalai Lama, I really felt inspired and moved by it. And so, as the disciple of Master Tsongkhapa and others, he had all the qualities of a master of, in terms of scholarship and learnedness, and then nobility and gentleness or humility. And so the first Dalai Lama actually founded the Teshedhimbu Monastery. But then, during the second Dalai Lama's time, he was unable to live in the Teshedhimbu Monastery due to certain circumstances. Although he was there in the beginning, but initially, but then he moved to Drepung, and then continued his studies and became abbot of Drepung and Sera monasteries. And then he also opened the door to the sacred lake of Balden Hamo, Hamo Lazo. And then with regard to the third Dalai Lama, Sonam Gyatso, so he continued his enlightened activity, continuing with the legacies of the first two Dalai Lamas. So he spread the teaching or tradition of Master Tsongkhapa in the Mongolia and other regions. So these three Dalai Lamas, the Gyedun Drup, Gyendun Gyatso, and Sönam Gyatso, are incomparable. And so, the first Dalai Lama, as he says, in general, feel the kindness of sentient beings. And particularly have pure vision of all the Dharma practitioners. So of course in those days we don't have so wide sort of contact in around the world, but today we have contact with all kinds of religious traditions. And so we can take this line to refer to in a narrow sense or in a broader sense. So here have pure vision or respect for all practitioners of all religions can mean either Buddhist practitioners who practice the path leading to liberation and so forth, but if you take it to within a wider context of the other religious traditions, we can also include the other religious traditions, non-Buddhist traditions as well, by acknowledging that all these religious traditions have been beneficial to innumerable number of sentient beings. And then with regard to Buddhism, the Tibetan tradition is one which combines both Sutra and Tantra. So all the religious Tibetan Buddhist traditions have both the traditions of Sutra and Tantra. And therefore, it is very important for us to have pure vision of all the practitioners of all these traditions. And then he says, goes on to say that subdue this enemy that is within. So the real enemy is the three poisons and the negative emotions that we have. We should not be negligent about it, but pay attention and to and try to subdue the inner enemies. So this is very important, so I wish to say this. So in order to subdue the negative emotions, we need to know how to do it. And therefore, as Gongdang Rinpoche says, having attained this precious human life and met with the Guru, and having met with the Dharma friends, and listened, having heard the teachings, make this life a meaningful one. And so we have been born in a place where the Dharma has spread, Dharma flourishes, and we are taken care of or guided by masters, qualified masters, and we are amongst practitioners, ocean of practitioners of the Dharma. In the beginning, when we came into exile, of course, the only things we were familiar with, the sky and the earth. And so when I left Noble Lenka, I didn't have any other things to carry with me. I brought with me a text of Lam Rim Chemo, the great treatise on the stages of the path to enlightenment by Lama Tsongkhapa, Master Tsongkhapa, and then some of my upper, my shirts, monastic shirts. And I also brought with me the divination dyes for doing divination, which belong to the 13th Dalai Lama, because I need also to survive, to do pujas for others, and then some other articles which belonged to the second Dalai Lama and so forth. And then those who fled from Jepung, Garden, Sera, and so forth, you also fled Tibet wearing your, whatever is on your back, and called hastily leaving Tibet to survive your life, to be alive. So in 1973 or so, I was in Switzerland. I went there. And so some of our Tibetan refugees who moved to Switzerland actually went to garbage area where the Swiss people threw their different things. They actually picked cups and so forth which were in good shape. So we didn't have even a box to carry with us when we fled Tibet. But then later on, as we acquired a box, we also acquired other things to put in it, and then accumulated more and more things. And then the Indian government, with the help of Indian government, there were about 5,000 monks from the different monastic institutions. So as we requested that at least 1,500 monks should be accommodated in somewhere to continue their study and practice. And although the Indian government only in the beginning said they could take 300, but we requested to take 1,500, and then some kind of place for their accommodation and study and so forth prepared in Baksa. And so because of the weather, the food got rotten, and then many, because of the climate, many people actually died. So our wish was to have really good, to produce good scholars who could continue this the tradition of study. And then there was a danger of actually the number of these scholars depleting quickly because of such situations, and therefore we started moving the monks down to South India here. And so in the beginning, the lay people had their own, houses, thatched roofs, and then the monastics were moved down here, living in very poor condition also. And then gradually our facilities became better and better. And then we even came to actually live a sort of luxurious life, and which actually causes distraction from the Dharma practice and study, which we are following is the Nalanda tradition, the pure Nalanda tradition. And so we, our aim was to establish this, the continuation of the study of the Nalanda tradition. And so while we have now all the necessary conditions, as it is said, such is very difficult to find, and therefore we should not procrastinate, but take full advantage of it. So, with regard to this, in connection with Guru devotion, Master Tsongkhapa says that taking essence or making this life meaningful is not just some kind of experience on which you may call the realization of Dharma and so forth, qualities and so forth, but you should actually engage in the practice of the three trainings. And therefore, I wish to request for you, the monastics here, to really work hard in your studies and practice, and through which your contribution to Buddha Dharma must come, which in turn are taught in the practice of taught in the classic text. So the best tools for our practice of the Dharma are found in these classic texts. Merely doing some kind of a retreat and doing some mantras and so forth will not help, because we have this very clever clinging to true existence and also cherishing self, self-cherishing attitude. And therefore, it's very difficult to overcome these merely through some blessings, so-called blessing from your lamas. Because we find in these classic texts that these self-cherishing attitude and the grasping of true existence can be actually made dumbfounded, speechless, through lots of arguments that are made given in the classic text. And so I'm actually telling you this from my own experience, having so all our studies, your studies, must be integrated within to subdue these inner enemies, and not for more or greater jealousy, nor for gain, making more money and wealth. So if you do this, then you're actually doing making a mistake. So if you actually make your study, use your study to make money and so forth, then you are actually reinforcing the power of self-cherishing and true grasping a true existence. And then that's very sad. So we are on the swift path. So this morning I was a little late, because first I went to visit the new meditation center of Serame, College of Serje, and so I visited there, and some of you lamas and tulkus and abbot were also present, and we did some, I talked and gave short talk there, and then I went to see the the former abbot Serje, Serje Monastery again, Lotudok. So he was a very close friend of mine. He had requested an audience with me, but then and then I agreed, but then he was not able to come to me. And so in the past I had visited Gerong Kensur. But I couldn't meet Gerong Kensur, but I sent messages to him. So Gyamlu Thotop is rather frail now. He's not able to sit. So he is a disciple of the late Chichan Rinpoche, Nyingma Rinpoche. And so we are students of the same masters. So therefore, I wanted to go visit him. So therefore, I was rather late to come here. So while meeting them, I also felt a little bit... And I was also thinking that I have thousands of people waiting for me at the teaching ground. So with regard to cultivation of this compassion, so first of all, imagine your master on your crown, and then within that, while doing this visualization, imagine all sentient beings who are suffering as if they were being led to the slaughterhouse. Then have the clear vision of a clear visualization or imagination of the sentient being suffering. So in the slaughterhouse, that they are their limbs are being chopped off, and then their skin being pulled, and then the butcher's hand goes into their body and snatching away out. So these are something which we can imagine very clearly happening in with regard to animals. And then the animals, when they are being slaughtered, they would actually cast the look up at this butcher, and then have intense suffering. And so make this prayer that may they be spirits free from suffering and its causes. May they be so although it is not very clearly mentioned here, so for Buddhist practitioners, mainly we should think about this conditioned existential suffering when we think about suffering of sentient beings. And which is to say that we need to think about the shortcomings or the default of negative emotions, because regarding the first two types of suffering, which are the painful, the obvious painful experiences, and the changeable sufferings, these may be, and even the practitioners of Christianity and so forth may be able to reflect on. So if you just think about the suffering of suffering, it would be very, you're focusing on a very easy type of suffering, and a superficial, almost like a superficial thing. So it's very important for Buddhist practitioners to focus on the suffering of the pervasive, conditioned existential suffering when we think about suffering. So, being under the influence or overpowered by the true grasping at true existence, we should think that there is an antidote against it, and all any sentient being can actually develop that antidote within them. So while this is the case, the sentient beings are actually, although do not want suffering, they run out of suffering, although they want happiness, they destroy the cause of happiness as if destroying their enemy, and therefore you should have this, use these kind of reasonings to really reinforce your practice of compassion by thinking about this kind of third type of suffering. And therefore, you should think of also liberating all sentient beings from suffering, and especially leading them to the state of omniscience, which is free from the two defilements. So when you think about this, if you ask yourself, do you really have the capacity to free sentient beings from suffering? Of course not. So even the arahats who have reached nirvana do not have the same this capacity to liberate all sentient beings from suffering. But the Buddha, who has the Buddha has the capacity to do so. The Buddha has compassion, which actually covers all sentient beings without any partiality, impartially, and that he has omniscience. And so is able to, has the capacity or capability to lead all sentient beings, innumerable sentient beings, to the state of omniscience. So even each of his body, speech, and mind, has that kind of capability to lead sentient beings to the state of omniscience. So perhaps if you take this kind of thing literally, there may be some problem to say that even the rays of light that emanate from the bodies of the Buddha and has that kind of capability may not be taken literally. As the Buddha himself has said that you are your own master. And he has said that he cannot, the Buddha has said that he cannot transpose his realizations into others. And did I tell this story that one Tibetan Lama has told his Chinese disciple that she should give him her money and he will actually lead her to Buddhahood? So when this statement here also seems to be similar to that kind of thing, like rays of light from the Buddha. The Buddha, as the supreme emanation body, when he appeared in India, there's no story about Buddha actually emanating light from his body and leading sentient beings to liberation and omniscience. So only by giving his teaching, he's said to have led sentient beings to liberation and arhatship. with regard to the first five disciples of the Buddha, of course, they were able to realize the path of the Arya beings and so forth within a short period of time, and then became arahats in the end. So these also came through teachings of the Buddha. So in order to fulfill the interest of oneself and others, you have to feel determined that you should attain Buddhahood, and therefore. So I tell others while I also practice it. In order to help other sentient beings, you should know their mental capacities or dispositions, because it is said that to those untrained, you cannot teach emptiness right away. But there may be exceptional cases where people have very good imprints from the past life, and otherwise the very subtle karmic imprints and so forth would be very hidden from us. So in order to show the complete path without any mistake and precisely as needed, required for sentient beings, we need to know their mental dispositions, their needs, interest, proclivity, and so forth. And so, if the bodhisattvas have the choice between overcoming the obscuration of knowledge or obscuration of the negative emotions, they would choose the first. Because according to the Madhyamaka tradition, without overcoming the... of course, in order to overcome the obscuration of knowledge, according to the Madhyamaka tradition, you cannot do so without having overcome the negative emotions which leaves that kind of imprint on the latent potency of them, the obscuration to knowledge. So on the you may think that there are numerous Buddhas and Bodhisattvas who can actually help sentient beings to become liberated. Why should I engage in the practice of Bodhisattvas? And of course, to answer this, of course, Sada Prarudita, this bodhisattva, actually had visions and also teachings from various Buddhas, but they all prophesied that his main teacher was the Dharmodara, and so he was instructed to go to Guru Dharmodara, the bodhisattva Dharmodara, because of his karmic connection, special karmic connection with him, because of which, if he relied on Bodhisattva Dharmodara, then he would be able to have realizations quickly. So, of course, if we have to go back to the beginningless life, then we cannot talk about this sentient being having greater karmic connection with this particular deity or Bodhisattva and Buddha and so forth. But and we have created karmas, special karmas, through which over time we may be more and have more affinity towards some Buddhas and Bodhisattvas rather than others. So the Buddhas, when they are able to meet with beings who have very strong special connection, karmic connection with them, if they really did something for them, then they were able to help them better. So similarly, it is the case with between the Bodhisattva Sada Prarudita and Bodhisattva Dharmodara. So you should not think that the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are there to help all sentient beings. Why should I bother to think about other sentient beings? So you should really think about this karmic connection between you and other sentient beings. And because of that, the faster or the quicker you, the sooner you become enlightened, Buddha, then the sooner you'll be able to help these sentient beings. And therefore, you should help this, have this determination to become a Buddha for the benefit of all sentient beings, and then seek the blessings of the gurus in order to be able to fulfill that goal. Then you should receive blessings from the gurus, and then you transform into Buddha Shakyamuni, and rays of light emanate from your body and touch the sentient beings in the hell realm, the hot hell realm, and soothe their, and send down the soothing rays of light to help them. And then also the cold hell realm. So here, this is like the tantric practice of visualizing the mandala deities, and then the sovereign mandala, and then doing the enlightened activities, performing the enlightened activities. And so if you do this, there's nothing wrong in actually doing the practice in excess. And then you also do the same emanation of light into the other sentient beings, like human beings, and then again do the same visualization of purifying the negativities and suffering of the sentient beings in the demigod realms. So with these rays of light, imagine all the sufferings of birth, aging, sickness, death, of sentient beings, human beings, and so forth, being purified. So with regard to the conclusion, it is like before, and then during the post meditation or in between meditation sessions, and then you should read scriptures teaching loving kindness, compassion, bodhicitta. And then next is the topic on equaling and exchanging self and others. So here, the Bodhisattva Charya Avatara's line, where it says one should actually practice the secret, the holy secret practice, doesn't mean tantra, but this practice of equalizing and changing, exchanging self and others, because this is something which is done by beings of sharper faculty, and then this is also done in connection with the giving and taking, visualizing, sending out your positive energies and so forth to other sentient beings, and with the out breath and taking in their suffering and negativities in with the in breath. And so, because this is something which is not, which the beings with a duller faculty or are not so apt at being able to do it, and therefore it is called secret practice. so he's on. He's taking his medicine, tang. He took it. And so here, when we talk about exchanging self and others, you are not actually thinking that you are others and others are you as such, but you are actually changing, switching the two attitudes of cherishing oneself and over cherishing others, and disregarding one's own interest and regarding others' interest more important. And so you make request to your guru again to be able to do this kind of practice. So by cherishing others, one can become fully enlightened, whereas so far, because of the self-cherishing attitude, I've been left in, I've remained in samsara, unenlightened. So this also relates the story of one being who actually thought to liberate or free others from suffering when he was suffering headache. So Gandhiji actually dedicated himself for the well-being of the people of India during this freedom struggle. First, he worked in Africa and against the apartheid, and then he worked for the right of the underprivileged people, and then later on came to India. And he engaged in the struggle, freedom struggle of India. And so, whether he had done these great works for the benefit of all sentient beings or not, he did it at least for the people of India. And because of holding others more important than himself, of course, we can see how great he has become in the world. And so, if you think about this, the well-being of others, you have greater benefit. I always tell people everywhere that the world belongs to the people of the world, and then the countries, each country belongs to the people of the country and not the leaders, kings, queens, or presidents, and so forth. But in order to govern the countries, we have the democratic process, democratic systems, who elect the own leader, and then the leader becomes accountable to the whatever he they do for the people. They become accountable to. And for example, in the case of America, during the President Nixon's time, because of Watergate issue, he was impeached. And so, this kind of quality of democracy has some connection with the cherishing others. And so the despots, authoritarian rulers, and so forth are under the influence of self-cherishing attitude. So many of the problems in the world, in the leaders as well as common people, are because of self-cherishing attitude. And then the good things that are in life and in the countries and so forth come from the cherishing others more important than oneself.
So
So you should consider as authoritative the words of those who are unbiased. So in the Tibet, in Tibet, of course, we didn't have democracy. And so it says that those who are more very selfish, and you should actually, people actually talk behind them. And so because we had no democracy, we had to do that, but today we have democracy, so we do not need to hide what we want to say, criticize about our leaders and so forth. So as long as this selfishness is there, and you cannot have this attitude of cherishing others over yourself. And so when we think about cherishing others over oneself, it's not saying that we should not think about our own well-being, because we are thinking about bodhicitta. And with regard to bodhicitta, it is this mind or the thought to become enlightened for the benefit of oneself and others. You have both the aspirations for the enlightenment as well as the well-being of other sentient beings. And therefore, as Jetsongkhapa also says, the more you dedicate to yourself, to the benefit of other sentient beings, the more you will benefit, the greater you will be able to benefit yourself as well. And I always tell that we are selfish, of course, but we should not be foolishly selfish, but we should be selfish wisely. By using our intelligence, we want happiness and joy and health. And if you think about the welfare of others, then you'll be happy and healthy. And on the contrary, if you think only about your own well-being, your own self, then you will not be happy. You will lose your peace of mind, and then you will also suffer in your health. So this is the nectar destroying the death of sentient beings. This is the medicine curing the diseases of sentient beings. This is the tree, the bodhicitta talking about, which gives a soothing shade for beings journeying who are fatigued by the journey on the samsara's path. And so, because of these great benefits of bodhicitta, therefore bodhicitta is also is the butter churned out of this ocean of the Dharma. And therefore, the greater you are devoted to others' well-being, altruistic, and determined to work for others, the greater you also benefit. This is something which is empirical experience for us. We do not have to use reason or scriptural support and scriptural quotations. If you look around, you will see this yourself. And therefore, holding others, so when you talk about taking on these negative actions and the suffering of others and giving out your own virtues and happiness to others, of course, when you consider this and think that whether you have the capability now to be able to serve others infinitely and so forth, of course, you will find that you do not have that yet. And therefore, you think of becoming a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings, a fully enlightened being. Now we'll switch to the fifth Dalai Lama's text. Taking bodhisattva sattva or bodhicitta through ritual, generating bodhicitta through ritual. That's the topic. Page. Actually, that is finished. Simkin, Jobachilur. Jobalobara. Slow, Tarish. Now we are on the same text, the Benchen Paldenishis. So taking Buddhist, so Benchen Sonam Thakpa has some qualm he has raised in some text. So with regards to generating bodhicitta and taking bodhisattva vows, as the text says that you can take it. So doing it simultaneously on Benjen Lobsang Chak, Benjen Sonam Chakpa has actually raised a qualm about doing these two simultaneously, which could actually be, as I said yesterday, this we find the worst, the verses that we find in Shantideva's text. We are doing it in one sequence, therefore it is referred to as doing it simultaneously. So with regard to these two, generating bodhicitta and taking bodhisattva vows, in the Shantideva's text, where you come to say that after calling on the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas to listen to you, just as all the Buddhas and Tathagatas and the Bodhisattvas have generated bodhicitta and then also have engaged in the bodhisattva deeds, likewise I will generate bodhicitta and engage in the bodhisattva deeds. So you say this three times, and then imagine having received bodhisattva vows, says, and then you say the prayers like feeling delighted for taking the having taken bodhisattva vows, that you have made this life a meaningful one, a fruitful one, and that you have attained an excellent human birth now, and you have been born into the Buddha's, as a Buddha's children, into the Buddha's family, and you have become a child of a Buddha. And then now, what come what may, I will do whatever is in accordance with this lineage and do nothing to sully or tarnish this noble lineage. And then next is preserving or guarding the bodhisattva vows which you have received. Then here again, you imagine the Buddha, your guru deity, on your crown, and then say that may I become a Buddha, a completely enlightened, a fully enlightened Buddha, for the benefit of all sentient beings, and therefore, reflecting on the benefit of the bodhicitta, you should generate bodhicitta three times a day and three times night. And then engaging in the bodhisattva practices, having generated.
Uh-huh.
So with regard to, we are now switching to the fifth Dalai Lama's text with regard on this topic. It is said in the Sutra Lamkara, so when you have the excellent wealth, when you have gained quite a good wealth, so that it doesn't add to increasing your negative emotions, if you actually understand what to discard and what to adopt, then you'll be able to do the practice, your practice, effectively, making great strides in your progress. So through the practice of morality, giving morality and patience, you do, in this life, your health, these are practices to help others. And then with wisdom, concentration, and joyous effort, you engage in the practice for fulfilling one's own interest, and so in this way, to be, in the context of helping others in interest and interest of interest of oneself, you have the number of the practices as these six parameters. And then there is the practice of the six perfections also is there are six perfections with regards to overcoming the negative emotions and the obscuration to knowledge as well.
And
so with these six parameters are also fixed in number in the sense of within the context of this three trainings as well. So Jerembuche actually gives commentary to the lines that are found in the Sutra Alamkara with regard to these, the certainty in the number of the parameters as being six in number. So with regard to the six perfections, the former are considered lower practice, and then as the latter ones progressively higher. And so the bodhisattvas engage in the practice of the six perfections for ripening one's own mind, and then do the four practices for assembling disciples for the benefit of sentient beings, others. So with regard to the practice of giving, so this regarding your own body and the wealth, So it is this mind which is unattached to one's wealth and body. So with that motivation, the action of actually giving your body completely on your body speech and the giving whatever you want to give to others with your body and speech is the nature of the giving. So your body speech and your wealth and so forth is dedicated for the well-being of all sentient beings in this practice of giving. So just as the prayer in Ratnavali says that may all the elements become sustenance for the sentient beings, just as they to enjoy as they like. And also the Bodhisattva Charya Avatara says, like the earth and so forth, the great elements, may I be sustenance for the infinite sentient beings. So these are showing the practice of the giving or generosity. So how do you perfect generosity is so it is not just overcoming the miserliness to in relation to your wealth and so forth, but because this is there even within the minds, within those of the Shravakas and Pratyekabuddha Arahants. But thinking of the benefit and the faults of not miserliness and so forth, you have this wish to give from the depths of your heart. So for the Bodhisattva practitioners of the Bodhisattvas, Yana, it is not only the material offerings that you give, but mainly the Dharma, giving Dharma. Because material offerings can be offered by the lay people, but for the monastics, engaging in Bodhisattva practices, it's mainly the giving Dharma. So Sharawa, the great master, the spiritual master Sharawa, has said, I'm not going to mention about the benefits of giving, but I'm going to mention you about the shortcomings of grasping at things.
Rang
So when you give, you should not your giving should not be tainted by acts of robbery and so forth, which you may through which you may take things from others, but and give to someone, but then give to others. So when you give thanks to and dharma to others, you should also dedicate that they may be able to realize these teachings. So in short, it says that when you give teachings or to others, teachings pertaining to the scriptures of the basic vehicle and the Mahayana in assembly, in some assembly, as necessary, and also give teach other subjects like Sanskrit or language and grammar or logic and art, medicine and so forth. And whatever you know from the knowledge that you have gained, and when you teach them to others, and then let them also, the sentient beings also, to follow, to keep the precepts and so forth, and then give the teachings of these subjects in accordance with their capacity, mental capacity. And then, having given the teaching, then you should make the wish that may they engage in listening, thinking, and meditation in order to benefit oneself and others. You should think like that, and as well as say these kind of prayers. And then, having done the practice of giving, then you should dedicate whatever positive energy you may have gained through this, just as it is done in the tradition of the great spiritual masters.
Thank you.
And not only that, it says, although you may not take the name of some preacher or teacher of the Dharma, if your friends are at the risk of indulging in negative actions, then you should give teachings in the form of some kind of a casual talk, and then show them what is right and what is wrong. And then turn their attention from the negative ones to the positive practices. So with these thoughts, you should give Dharma to such people. So with regards to vegetarian and taking to vegetarianism and non-vegetarianism, in the Vinaya, there is no abstention. The monks, monastics are not prohibited from eating meat, and therefore in Sri Lanka, Burma, Thailand, and so forth, the Theravada countries, the monks do not abstain from taking meat. So I met one Sri Lankan monk who told me once, many, many years ago, that monks do not have any choice over which food they want. They cannot order the patrons and the sponsors who actually offer them meal, since big shoes are supposed to go begging for their food. Whatever the sponsors give must be accepted. If the sponsor is non-vegetarian, then the monks should also accept the non-vegetarian food. And if the sponsor is vegetarian, then the monks should accept the vegetarian food they give. But then, in the Mahayana tradition, because of the emphasis on practice of compassion, vegetarianism is very important. And so, in China, which is a country where Mahayana has spread, the Chinese monks and nuns stick to vegetarian meal. But in Japan, Korea, and so forth, there are Mayan practitioners who also take non-vegetarian meals. In vegetarian meal, but in Tibet, because of scarcity of vegetables and so forth, especially in the nomad areas, the nomads, without depending on meat, butter, and so forth, and then traditionally Tibetans have been non-veg. So there's not much restriction on a non-veg meal. But if you are in places where there are a lot of vegetables available, and rice and so forth, vegetarian meals, then we should actually take vegetarian food, take interest in becoming vegetarian. And so in the monastic institutions here in South India, and with the monastic institutions themselves have actually taken to vegetarian meal from the common kitchen. But then, and also in the Tibetan settlement villages, the common people, the lay people's villages, of course, we did not actually start piggery and but we started a poultry farm. Then, one time I told the representatives that unless it's really indispensable to have the poultry for the egg, and we should not have the poultry farm. But they said this is for, they told me that this, that the hens are for egg and not anything else. But then, when I asked them at one point, at some point the hens stopped giving eggs, and at that time, what do you do with the hens? And so, they had no clear answer to me. So there may be the risk of taking these hens who have stopped giving eggs to for slaughter in the camps here, villages. And therefore, I asked them to stop the poultry farm also. So because of our emphasis on compassion, it would be good to take to vegetarian meal. Except when your health, for the sake of your health, you need to take meat. You should take to vegetarianism. And then in the monastic institutions, the monks are engaged in very rigorous study, spending hours, many hours in their study from early morning. Starting with the memorization of text and then attending, taking part in debate, and then also reciting what they have memorized. And so it's the best is to take a vegetarian meal, but except and when you health for your health, you need meat. And you should take. So I usually tell people that I have been advocating vegetarian meal, but I am vegetarianism, but I am actually taking non-veg meals. And the reason is, at some point in 1960s, I for about 20 months, I was vegetarian. Then I suffered jaundice because of taking milk and then nuts and butter. I had this jaundice, because of which my whole body turned yellow. And so later on, I make joke about myself, saying that at that time I actually became a living Buddha, with a golden body, so as they call Chinese in Chinese. So this living Buddha was not because because of practice, but because of disease. So I became totally golden. My body turned golden. And then in 1966, and I suffered for a long time. And so that was 1966, and then I consulted allopathic medicine, medical doctors, as well as Tibetan traditional medical doctors, who advised me that I should go back to the original diet, non-vegetarian. And then I started eating meat, but not every day. I have meat two or three times a week. And So the monks in our monastic institutions here have taken great interest and actually taken to vegetarianism, which is very good, and also our secular schools have done so. And then in the Western countries, there are people like our teachers, Tibetan teachers, who stick to non-vegetarian meal, but then the students are vegetarians. So for such teachers, you should be able to actually transform your meat, non-vegetarian meal, into nectar, as we have the practice in Tantra. So of course it's a different story if you were told by your doctors to take the non-vegetarian meal. Perhaps George Akisha was vegetarian in those days. In the Langar Avatara Sutra, which is a Mahayana sutra, non-vegetarian meal is prohibited in general, but in other Mahayana texts, like the Mahayana Madhyamaka Srideya, the heart of Madhyamaka by Bhavimeka, Bhavimeka actually interprets this prescription of vegetarian meal, or prescription of the non-veg. So Khunu Lama Rinpoche has told me that in general, the Mahayana sutras do not prohibit eating meat, but there are specific sutras which do. So this is the point where I wanted to make in relation to this text. So His Holiness is making all these comments in connection with the text, and where it mentions that Fifth Dalai Lama's text, moved by compassion, great compassion, the Bodhisattvas engage in very difficult practices, such as actually cutting one's own flesh from one's body. And this is done when they do not actually feel it. They don't feel disillusioned by such difficult practices. And then when the purpose or the benefit is not small or minor, so mainly you have to think about the benefit of others, the long-term benefit. And for example, the Vinaya practices of the precepts are not fixed, and sometimes you need to see according to the situation what is best. And
to
So these are the verses in the middle of the text, or the intermediary verses. So we'll stop here.